I am glad to be back. I did notice that Jackson got a 15-yard penalty and a $50,000 fine. He throat slashed right off the bat today, and I was like, whoa! But no, for real, it's good to be here. It's always fun for me to come, and now that you guys know who I am and you've seen me once, you kind of know what to expect, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's kind of how it goes, right? Actually, believe it or not, your pastor, he texted me this morning. He was in Detroit. He had just hit the ground, and he sent me a nice little quick text. Just hit the ground in Detroit, praying for you. And I just want you guys to know, I absolutely love your pastor. And that man, he means the world to me. And you guys are lucky to have him as your pastor. He has made a huge influence on my life, and I know he's going to make a huge influence on your guys' lives as well. That being said, I kind of have a guilty pleasure. We don't have cable or satellite or anything like that at our house, so we have like 8 channels, okay? And I kind of like it that way, honestly. But this thing happens on Saturday mornings, right? So you're watching cartoons with the kids, and then you think it's just a commercial, and then it's an infomercial, right? But I find myself watching an infomercial for an hour. And I'm like, I'm just so enamored by these things. And I'm watching them, and I'm like, this is the most fantastic product I've ever seen in my life. I understand why this is an hour-long commercial. And you know, and I'm like watching these Ronco commercials, and I'm like yelling at the TV, set it and forget it, right? I'm excited about this thing. I'm like, I need one of those rotisserie ovens. I never buy anything, but I will watch the whole hour-long commercial and just be really excited about it. Flex Seal? Has anybody ever bought Flex Seal? Does that stuff work? Because I'm fascinated by it. I just want to buy like 5 screen doors and spray it and just have a house. We'll just prop them bad boys up in the field and spray it down with Flex Seal. We're good. No problems, right? I'm going to cut a hole in my duck boat and just put a screen door in it and spray it and just see how it works next year. I mean, seriously, that stuff, I don't know. Is it that real? Is it that good? I mean, I see them, they're like, it's like a water main in like New York City, like 14 inches, and you know, the municipality guys are like, I've got a can of Flex Seal. They just spray it while it's just a gusher. Look at that, fixed it. Wow. Right though? But is that not kind of how this world portrays everything though? Right? There's always something that's gonna be fascinating, and it's always really, really good, and it's super simple and really, really cheap. And for most of us, if you've been on this earth for very much time at all, you realize that most things that seem to be better than they really are better than they really are, and they're really not that good, and it's too good to be true, right? I mean, and parents, we are constantly trying to teach our kids not to take the shortcut, right? And the world is constantly trying to give us a shortcut. I mean, I'm not old enough to remember, like, no microwave ovens. Those things have been around my whole life. But for those of you who remember when microwave ovens started, I'm sure that was like, oh my goodness, right? And so now they have, like, whole meals. They have, like, a Hungry Man meal. It's like 8 pounds of food you can just stick in the microwave. And you can feed, like, a 50-person army with them, right? I mean, it's like, wow. But it's like, in 3 minutes, you can have a whole meal. And it's like your grandma's going, why did we work so hard for all these years to make a 4-course meal when in 3 minutes you can have one? Let me tell you something. If you eat one of those meals every day for the rest of your life, you will die young. And really salty. I mean, you'll be like pickled, you know. Because that's how they do that. They just load them for salt. They'll last forever. But right, I mean, the too good to be true thing is very, very real. And it's very evident in our life. But there's something, I think, that really is as good as its build, and it really is as simple as God says it is, and that's salvation through Jesus Christ. And I think oftentimes, because of our human nature, we try to find a way to overcomplicate it and to make it tough, and we're like, can it really be as easy as just simply, like Jackson said earlier, putting my faith in Jesus Christ and trusting Him for what's to come? Is it really just that simple? That's it? That's the only requirement? And what do we do? As humans, we try to tie all kinds of things to salvation. We're always trying to do more. We're trying to put more into it, trying to add things to it. And we're always looking for something to make it more difficult. And the truth be told, even though Southern Baptist, I mean, you guys are Southern Baptist, by the way, if you don't know that, welcome to the Southern Baptist Church of Arnhart Baptist Church. But Southern Baptist would claim that we're a faith-only church, and that's really, we nail that down, and we are not works-based, and we really talk about that, and we're once saved, always saved, and we believe that, and we would say we believe it to the core, but yet when someone walks through this door that doesn't look exactly like you, but professes to be a Jesus Christ, and they don't maybe don't walk like you or talk like you, you begin to question whether they really could be. But yet we would stand up and we would all say, salvation is just as simple as putting faith in Jesus Christ. And so it's one of those things where we always try to tie things to salvation. And Paul says, he says, you put anything with grace at all, and there's no grace at all. He says, if you tie anything to grace, you say if it's grace and, he says, there's no grace at all. And so I want to talk about a story, and I'm actually going OT today, right? Like this is 2 Kings. So if you got a Bible, go to 2 Kings chapter 5. And I hope to talk to you about a guy that maybe you've never heard of. Naaman. Does anybody know who Naaman is besides Leland? Leland, did you know him personally? I'm just teasing Leland. I love Leland. I actually, whenever I was at New Sight, do you remember this, Leland? I was introducing you to my intern, and so New Sight was founded in like 1860 or something. He could tell you when it was founded. I don't remember, but I told my intern. I said Leland was the first pastor of New Sight, and Leland goes, "I was not." I couldn't help it. It's not right. I apologize, Leland. But I want to read 2 Kings chapter 5, and this is a lot, but I really want to get this whole story, and I'm going to kind of, I'll interrupt the story and say a few things, and then we're going to go back, and kind of like always, we're going to unpack it, tear it apart, and then I've got two quick points to make, and then we can all go to Akambaro and tell them we're going to Brahms, okay? There's another lawsuit coming, Jackson. I wonder if they, like, visit your guys' website and listen to this stuff. All right. Chapter 5. We're going to read through verse 19, so buckle up. Hold on. Here we go. Now, Naaman was a commander of the army of the king of Aram. So that's present-day Syria, just for those of you who want to know geographically where that was. He was a great man in the sight of his master, and highly regarded because through him, the Lord had given victory to Aram. Now, this is interesting to me because these people would have been in direct opposition of the people of Jerusalem, of God's people. And so you see something here where God has given victory to somebody outside of his own people. And that's interesting to me. So he had given victory to Aram in direct opposition to his people. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now, bands of raiders from Aram had gone out and taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served as Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, "If only my master would see the prophet who is in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy." Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. "But by all means," the king of Aram replied, "I will send a letter to the king of Israel." So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took to the king read like this: "With this letter I am sending my servant Naaman to you so that you may cure him of his leprosy." As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, this is the king of Israel saying this, he said, "Am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life?" He's offended by this letter. "What does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he is trying to pick a quarrel with me." So he thinks that the king of Aram is trying to pick a fight. He's like, seriously? Does he think I have, you know? So he thinks that this is a fight getting picked. Verse 8, "When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent this message: 'Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me, and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel.' So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to say to him, 'Go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored, and you will be cleansed.' But Naaman went away angry and said, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hands over the spot to cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of the Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed? So he turned and went off enraged. Naaman's servants went to him and said, my father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you have not have done it? How much more then when he tells you, wash and be cleansed? So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times as the man of God had told him, and his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Verse 15. Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. So please accept a gift from your servant. The prophet answered, as surely as the Lord lives, whom I serve, I will not accept a thing. And even though Naaman urged him, he refused. If you will not, said Naaman, please let your servant be given as much earth as a pair of mules can carry, for your servant will never again make burnt offerings and sacrifices to any other god but the Lord. But may the Lord forgive your servant for this one thing. When my master enters the temple of Rimon to bow down, and he is leaning on my arm, I have to bow there also. When I bow down in the temple of Rimon, may the Lord forgive your servant for this. And Elisha said, go in peace. What an interesting story. I mean, when you really begin to break that down, and we kind of look at it through our own perspective, and you know, whenever I see Naaman, right? Here's Naaman, a high commander of the king of Aram's army. So he is a big shot, right? He's a big dog. He probably is like second or third in command in this country. He's a big deal. And he's got this problem. So he's got a high social status. He's a man of honor. He was honorable to the king. The king would have thought highly of him. He had people under his service, right? But what was his problem? He had leprosy. Now, leprosy then is not like leprosy now. Leprosy now is more of a neurological thing. And those of you who know this, like a possum on a half shell now carries leprosy, right? That's an armadillo for those of you from the northern part. So, armadillos carry that, but it's a neurological thing now. Back then, it would have been a skin lesion, a big white area or scaly, and people were really, really scared of it. In fact, it caused limbs. People would lose limbs due to it, and so. But here's one thing that I find interesting. And people would have been scared to death of someone with leprosy. So we know that Naaman most likely had this for a while, but it had been a private problem that had become a public problem. Let me tell you something. Somebody here today is struggling with something in private that if you don't get a hold of it, God will make it public in order for you to get help. What am I saying? I'm saying secret sin on earth is open scandal in heaven. I'm going to say that again. Secret sin on earth is open scandal in heaven. You see, we tend to, as humans, we tend to take our little sins, and we got this little thing that we like to do, and we kind of hide it and don't let anybody else see it, and we want to keep it, and maybe it's like your little pet sin and you pet it, right? And someone walks in the room and you like put it in a drawer and hide it or whatever. But what you don't realize is that as you begin to cultivate that sin, and that thing begins to get bigger and bigger, and it gets a stronger, stronger hold on your life. And eventually, the Bible tells us that sin gives birth to death. And so as you cultivate that sin, and as you hide that sin, and you kind of take care of it in darkness, let me tell you something. There's a day that's coming for you if you don't get control of it, and you don't maybe get it out in public, or you don't try to get some help with it, that it's coming where it's going to be made public. And you're going to stand like Naaman, a man with leprosy, and you're going to be out in the open, and you're going to have this leprosy, and all of a sudden, everybody knows what's going on. You know something? One of the things that I think is most tragic is pastors oftentimes feel like they're not allowed to sin. And it's a pretty tough thing, really, to be a pastor. And it's pretty tough to struggle with something, and it's pretty tough to try to maintain a leadership in a church where really perfection is preached, right? That's what we preach. We preach Jesus. That's perfection. And that is the goal. But we all know that it's impossible for us to maintain a goal as perfection as humans. But oftentimes, pastors are relegated to a place to struggle in their own sin by themselves because they don't feel like they can go to anybody in confidence and say, I have a problem with this. I'm struggling with this. I need help with this. And we've all heard stories of pastors with these problems, and they end up very, very public, and there's these huge failures. There was a pastor not long ago of a church in South Carolina, and I actually really liked to listen to him preach, but he had an alcohol problem, and he constantly had tried to hide it, and he constantly had tried to take care of it himself, and it just got worse and worse and worse, and finally the church fired him. And they said, this has gotten out of control. And he confessed, he said, I thought I could deal with it myself. I wanted to deal with it. I just couldn't find it. I had become an alcoholic, and I just didn't know what to do. And you know what broke my heart worse than that? Worse than his failure, what broke my heart worse than that was people of the church that piled on and said, I told you that guy was a fake. I told you that guy was no good. I told you that. And I thought, why aren't we gathering around this guy and trying to lift him back up? You see, our tendency as a church is typically when we see someone in failure, we want to point and talk and almost make them feel worse about their sin. Let me tell you something. When someone has been caught in failure publicly, they feel bad enough. And Naaman felt bad. He was not comfortable with how he looked. He was not comfortable with who he had become. And he was looking for a way. And it doesn't really say everything he went to, but I can just imagine as this stuff spreading, maybe it started like on his side under his shirt so no one could see it, and then it slowly maybe grew down his leg and it was exposed on his calf or something. But I can just imagine this guy in the wee hours of the night sneaking down to the river and just rubbing the thunder out of that, trying to get it to come off. And he's going, I've got leprosy. I know I've got leprosy. And he's trying to wash this off. And nothing he does gets rid of it. And somebody here this morning is in the exact same boat. You've got a sin in your life that you constantly have tried to, and you tried to suppress it. And maybe you've had some success for a season, right? You have success for a season, but you always go back to that sin and it ends up worse than it was before. That's how sin works. You may have success for a season, but until you really deliver that and hand that over to God, you're always going to end up as a dog returns to its vomit, right? And that's nasty. But if you really look at your life and you're really honest with yourself, you could say, yeah, I've returned to my vomit before. There's been things in my life that I'm not proud of, and I've tried to overcome them, that I've ended up going back to those things. I've wanted to go back and take care of those things that I try to turn and walk away, but you never really dealt with it. You never dealt with it with God, and you end up going back. You see, whenever we try to overcome the power of sin on our own, we're not strong enough. But to overcome the power of sin with God, that's where the magic happens. Let's keep going. So we know Naaman was proud, right? And so here's Naaman. He's got an issue, but I find something very, very interesting in this, and if you look back in there, it says his wife, who was a servant girl, who had come from where? Jerusalem. So Aram would send raids. They were trying to cause discord in Jerusalem. And so they would send people into Jerusalem, and they would kidnap these people and bring them back and make them slaves in their country. So this is a little slave girl who is Jewish, who is in a household an Aram man, a Syrian man, who would have been really the arch enemy of these people. And she's been taken captive and been forced to be a slave wife. But she cares enough. And I'm not convinced that she loves him like you all love your spouses. But she loves him because she has God in her life. And she says, there's a man in my home country that can heal him. Let me ask you guys a question. Is there someone in your life you just can't stand? Everybody's like, yeah. Don't nudge your spouse. Just saying, Right? I mean, we've all got somebody that's just like, I mean, rub you the wrong way. I don't care. It's just like, man. Now imagine if that person owned you. Like, slavery's been gone for a while in this country. But imagine if that person owned you. and this is a little bit graphic, but imagine if that person got to sexually please themselves with you. Man, that brings a whole new... Now imagine that you care enough about that person to tell them about Jesus Christ. This girl had it together. And this is all we know about her. Just this one little piece. But she was a servant girl, but she cared enough about that man that she wanted to see him be healed. And ultimately, it wasn't so much his physical healing as it was her spiritual his spiritual healing that she was concerned about. Why? Because whenever you introduce someone to Jesus, it changes who they are. There's a transformation in their life, and she knew that if she could introduce Naaman to God, that there would be an opportunity for her to live in harmony, and there would be a better life for her because of that. And so whenever we begin to care about people to the point where we despise them, but yet we want them to meet Jesus because we know that that's going to change who they are, it's going to change their destination, right? As far as eternally, but it also changes who they are. If you've given your life to Christ, you know you are a different person because of that. You absolutely are. You're absolutely a different person. And so she cared enough that she wanted to see him change. She wanted that to happen. So she says, you need to go see this man in my home country. And Naaman's like, all right, you know. Hey, let me tell you something. If you've got something in your life that has just really oppressed you and kept you down, you are ready to try anything, especially once it's become public. You ever notice how when these people get caught in this public stuff, it's like, I'm checking into it. I mean, it's all of this stuff becomes very, very public, and it's usually a lot of people get help because of it. And so Naaman was ready to get this fixed, and so he goes to his king and says, write me a letter. I want to go to the king. And so he's like, let's go. So they go, and he goes to the king. Let me ask you guys a question. Whenever you have a problem with somebody, right? Like, say we're at Acambaro's, and like you suspect something's wrong with your food. Who do you ask for? It's like, give me the manager, right? And like the manager doesn't do anything. It's like, give me the owner's phone number. Apparently, I'm like Arnold Schwarzenegger whenever I'm at Acambaro's. But it's like, right? I mean, that's we want to talk to, give me who's in charge. I find it interesting that the king in this situation knew that he was not in charge over this thing. So here's the king, and he takes this letter, and the king all of a sudden, he's offended. He goes, do I have the power to, I don't have power to do this. This is not who I am. He's basically saying the only person that has power to do this is God himself. And he's like, you need someone else. This is not me. And he's offended. And in my mind, the way I see this, I just think Naaman was just like, the only person who could possibly fix my problem in this country, because I know this is the country I have to go to, is the king. He's in charge. Let me tell you something. Healing comes by humility. I'll say that again. Healing comes by humility. You really can't find healing until you find humility. What am I saying? You know, there has to be a breaking point. There has to be a point in your life where you're going, you know what, I just can't do this. And I don't care what it is. If it's lifting weights, right? Anybody in here like a weightlifter? These guys look jacked, right? Like Vito and Blado, right? So you're just like, but there's a breaking point. It's like, man, I'm going to do like 230 10 times. Sure, okay. So, but like if you're like man, I want to do 230 and you go and you're going and it's like 8 and you're like, spot me, dude. And it's like, I'm going to get this. But there's this breaking point and there's this humility where he begins to help you, right? And it's like all of a sudden you crank out 10, but you know you really didn't do it on your own, but to humility, you know you got to work harder. And you know that something's got to change. Humility brings healing. It's just like that in our lives. Really, until you have humbled yourself at the cross of Jesus Christ, you can't come to true healing. And that may be something for somebody here this morning. Maybe you've never really humbled yourself at the cross of Jesus and said, I know I need you. You may have been okay with the idea of it, and maybe you know to say, you know, my little girl, she never ever in her life has figured out that she has a sin problem. She can tell you all the right answers. She's been in church her whole life. She's been to every VBS there's ever been. But she doesn't understand the fact that she has to humble herself at the cross of Jesus. And if you had asked her, are you a Jesus follower? Absolutely. But she's not there yet. Now, I don't think she's ready yet. She's just six. But she's not there yet. It takes humility. So Naaman ends up, how am I doing on time? Okay, I better get going. So Naaman ends up, right? He ends up going and he meets with Elisha. What's Elisha do? Elisha doesn't even come out himself. He sends his helpers out. He says, just go tell him to wash in the muddy Jordan. And Naaman's like, you got to be kidding me. Seriously? He's like, you want me to go get in that dirty, muddy river? And he says, aren't the rivers in Damascus way, way cleaner? And if anything was going to wash this bad boy off, don't you think it would be the rivers in Damascus? And he said, I just knew that guy would come out and wave his hands and holler and yell and, you know, or whatever. And he's like, I just knew that's how that was going to go. And he said, he just goes, sends his helper out, says, go wash in the river. And it's a muddy river. I find it funny, his helpers are like, yeah, but if he would have done all that stuff, wouldn't you have been okay with that? And he was like, yeah. He goes, then go get in the river. Hey, let me tell you something. Sometime whenever you're battling something in your life, and there's a trusted friend or a trusted counselor or somebody you look up to in the faith, and they say, just do this. Even though sometimes it seems minuscule and silly, sometimes that first step is the step that makes all the difference. You know what I'm saying? Maybe you've wronged someone. Maybe you've hurt someone. And you're like, man, it's just too big. And someone that you really trust says, just go apologize. Just go say two words. I'm sorry. And it seems small and it seems like, yeah, but I don't think that's going to be enough. It's a good start. And so he goes and he washes in the river and everything changes for him, right? So he gets washed and all of a sudden he's clean, and now all of a sudden he understands the power of God and the power of Elisha's God. And he sees this stuff wash away and he comes out, and really the Bible there, it says a young boy's skin. It's like a baby's skin, like smooth as a baby's bottom, right? And so it's just, his skin is beautiful, and all this is sloughed off and washed away. And man, his tune changes. Does it not? He's like, I know there's no God in the whole world except for the God in Israel. And just give me all the dirt two donkeys can carry, and I'm going to take it back with me, and I'm going to build a temple on it and all this, right? Everything changes for him. Everything changes. Two quick points, because I really got to be quick. Number one. Arrogance can keep us from God's healing. And I'm not talking about necessarily about physical healing as much as spiritual healing. And yes, God still heals physically. But I'm talking about this morning, I'm talking about your spiritual healing, the thing that you're struggling with in your life. Arrogance can keep you from that. Arrogant that you can take care of it on your own. Arrogant that I can keep it hid so long that no one will ever know. Arrogant to think that whoever you've hurt or that there's no one else involved, all that stuff, all those things were just arrogance can keep you from God's. And a lot of times we keep God's plan and his help from our life. We keep it because we go to the king instead of someone who can really help us, right? Or students, we go to our friends for parent advice when we ought to be going to our parents. Hey, this one's free for the kids. Listen to me right fast. If you're a kid, listen to me. You know your parents want nothing more than for you to succeed in life. Nothing more. They don't want to see you hurt. They don't want to see you damaged. And they want to see you successful. Give them the benefit of the doubt. Just trust them that they love you and they care for you and they want the best for you above everything else. There's never been a parent that loves their children go, you know what, I think I'm going to mess with them. We'll just mess their life up like when they're 14. And a lot of you girls are like, you know, at 14, it's like, you ruined my life. Like, no, we're not. We're trying to save your life. He's 21. And he's going to prison. Number two, God rarely works like we think he should. Like the way you think God ought to work in a situation, just think the opposite. That's probably how he's going to do it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just like, it's crazy to me to just, when I look back now, you look back at your life and you look at how God did things and you're just like, is that really how we got here? And why did we do it that way? But God's like, what's up, right? God rarely works the way we think he should. Oftentimes we think God ought to lay it out and it ought to be a nice straight road, right? Because everybody likes to quote Jeremiah 29:11 and act like that's how they're going to win a basketball game, and that's not even close to what that verse is about, by the way. You go read the book of James, and James tells us, like, if you want to see God at work, look for trials in your life. You want to grow up in the Lord, look for a place where you're having to persevere. And then you look back on your life and you begin to look through those things and you go, that's where it's at. So point two, God rarely works where we think he should. Let me tell you this too, God's plan is rarely as elaborate as we think it should be. We're going to start playing some music here in just a second. But this is the thing I want you to think about. What is your need today? What is it that you know unless God intervenes and heaven opens up and looks down on you and says, I see your humility and I'm here to help. What is that? You see, we often, because of our social status, and especially here in America, we all want to look perfect, right? And especially in churches, it's like, hey, everything. Like, how are you? We're so great, right? And like, sister had brother in a headlock before we get on, you know? So quit it, kids. We're at church now. It's like, hey, why can't we be real here? Why not? What better place than to be who you really are? And be authentic. And be honest and open and loving and caring than right here. We're going to enter into a time of prayer. And this is open. You can make an altar right there at your chair. I want you to think about this. What's one simple step that God's calling you to make today? Is it trusting one person in your life that's really trying to pour into you and care for you and love you? And just saying, you know what? I think you're right. Maybe you've got a sin in your life that you know has been hanging around for way, way, way too long. And you've kept it hidden and you've kept it suppressed, but you know that there's a day coming where that thing's going to be public. Just don't know how to do anything about it. Right here. Healing is found in humility at the foot of the cross. I want you guys to bow your heads and close your eyes. I want to pray for you, and then Jackson will take it over.